Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis today for you, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good news, and it's a double-barreled good martini today, at least for conservatives, not so much for Democrats at all. Two different stories today, one focusing on how Hillary Clinton, while obviously making a big deal out of her book tour, is doing virtually no campaigning for Democrats in major Senate races and other races around the country this year, in what is obviously a critical time for Democrats trying to hold on to the majority, trying to win some key governorships in preparation for 2016, which could actually benefit her. But she seems pretty much content to worry about herself. At the same time, President Obama couldn't care less about other problems that Democrats are having. There's a story, I believe, from the New York Times where he was in a meeting to talk about Iraq with Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell and key leaders on the House side. And Harry Reid started griping about how Senate Republicans were holding up ambassadorial nominations. And he was expecting a tongue lashing for Mitch McConnell. And the only thing the president said was, you and Mitch work it out. And then Reid was seething for the rest of the meeting, according to this report. So frustrations for Democrats, but the egotism here could redound to the benefit of the GOP.
Yeah, and I think there are two things that are kind of useful about this. Obviously, the idea of, you know, Democrats griping about their leaders always brings a warm and fuzzy feeling to our hearts. but I think kind of it's a useful corrective to the cult of personality that grew up around Obama, and maybe even a useful indicator of, you know, we always argue, look, you know, Obama is so checked out of his presidency, the only thing he cares about is his partisan agenda. It's a very strange anecdote that can make me feel a little bit of sympathy for Harry Reid. Once again, way to go, Nevada, way to go. We can argue with good reason that the ambassador, some of Obama's ambassadorial picks are just rewarding donors and that they make a mockery of the diplomatic process, things like that. But here's Harry Reid saying, hey, you know, Republicans are blocking a vote on this. And Obama is making very clear in this meeting he just doesn't care. And Mr. President, if you don't care about your ambassadors, who the heck does? It's kind of like when your dog won't play with you with his favorite toy or something. You know, when Obama can't get stirred to demonize the opposition for blocking him, that's like his favorite thing in the world. You know, it's like him giving up golf. Like, Mr. President, what's wrong? Are you feeling okay? So it suggests that the president's growing boredom, disinterest, detachment, disillusionment with, you know, the job of being president is really growing at an exponential pace to the point where, like, even, you know, the whole story in the New York Times is full of Senate Democrats saying, yeah, I have no relationship with this guy. He never reaches out. He does nothing to help us get stuff passed. The really intriguing thing is, like, it used to be, you'd see these stories in the first term, and it would be like, well, Obama needs to do more socializing and get to know lawmakers outside of the Oval Office. And, like, it's very clear congressional Democrats no longer expect this to happen anymore. So one, that's, you know, not much of a good prospect for getting anything, you know, major pieces of legislation passed for the next 2 years, regardless of who controls the Senate and regardless of what the numbers in the House are. But it just kind of indicates, like, that we really have a guy who's got senioritis, who can't wait for his post-presidential life to begin, who psychologically has already resigned and left the presidency. And that's kind of baffling. And the other aspect, coming from Michael Barone, points out that Hillary is not on the campaign trail for a lot of Democrats this year. While we shouldn't necessarily be stunned by it, you figure she'd be really good at it. You hear Bill Clinton going out and helping Alison Lundergan Grimes and some folks like that. But when she comes and decides, hi, I'm ready to be your nominee now, a lot of Democrats who you'd think would just line up and endorse her and salute may not be so eager to do that. And I think that there's a strong, fertile area of criticism that for Hillary Clinton or the Clintons, it's always all about them. It's what can you do for them? If she can make the time to give these $250,000 a pop speeches to these big corporate clients and public universities spending tuition dollars and things like that, you'd figure she could pop in or, you know, attend a fundraiser or do other things. Like, this is kind of standard issue for leaders of parties. Boehner does it. McConnell does it. I mean, these guys go out and you help out the members of your party. She doesn't seem to think she needs to do that. And that kind of gives off that monarchist vibe to the Clintons that she expects to have this nomination handed to her. Neither one of the leaders of the Democratic Party right now feels like they need to do much for the people below them. That's a good formula for resentment and discontent in the ranks.
Yeah, because that worked so well for Hillary the last time she ran for president. Yeah. So, all right, on to the bad martini now. And obviously, Ferguson, Missouri has been a very difficult story for a lot of people for about a week and a half now. And, Jim, we've talked about the thoughtful debate over the extent of police tactics in this situation. But today we're just looking at all the different things that have been tried, and nothing seems to have worked. At first, there was the pretty heavy police, local police response to the looting and the rioting. That was obviously condemned, and the highway patrol was brought in. They took a more hands-off approach. The rioting continued, and the looting continued to some extent. And then now we have the National Guard coming in. We've had curfews, no curfews, all sorts of different tactics tried, and nothing seems to be getting the job done in terms of restoring calm.
A lot of reasons that this, you know, what's going on in Ferguson is bad news. Whatever you suspected the appropriate response of the police was, it's been tried in the past week, and it doesn't seem to be working. I'm among those who kind of felt like we'd see the trend of militarization of police that folks like Radley Balko and the Cato Institute have been writing about for a while. It was easy to ignore for a while, and then you start seeing more and more examples of no-knock raids, and like, maybe we're seeing something, a troubling trend in our police force so that they're across our country. They're starting to see their jobs more in a more military-style approach to things and using military-style equipment, the armored personnel carriers, the smoke grenades, and that sort of thing. Well, they tried that, and that clearly did not work. That clearly, you know, a lot of people said it kind of, you know, exacerbated tensions and made things worse. The next couple of nights, I think it was last Thursday, they had the captain of the highway patrol, the African-American gentleman who had grown up in the area, and folks were coming up and embracing him. Cops were not in the full armor. And, oh, okay, things are getting better, except that night there was more rioting, more looting, more violence. So then, they tried a curfew. Didn't work. More rioting, more looting, more violence. And then they brought out the National Guard last night, which did their job of protecting the police headquarters that apparently other groups had tried to attack earlier. Doesn't this sound like we're describing a war zone or Baghdad or Fallujah, Greg? It's just weird. And one of the things I'm struck by is that whatever, like two things. One, let's assume for the sake of argument, you buy into the worst possible interpretation of the police actions in the shooting of Michael Brown. And let's say, you know, reckless shooting or unjustified shooting is completely worth protesting. And from the coverage of Ferguson, it sounds like it's going on in that community basically all the time. Every time they cut to Jake Tapper or somebody in Ferguson, there are people honking their horns and holding up signs and stuff like that. So they're protesting all day long. The sun goes down. It continues into the night. Then at that point, the protest starts involving throwing things at police. The example that kind of jumped out at me was, but I quoted in the Morning Jolt, was somebody was knocking over porta potties. I don't see how that's really a form of protest. Even in the most sympathetic understanding, all you're doing there is attempting to spill human feces into the street. I don't see how you can say, I'm doing this for my community, when your actions involve putting human feces into the street of your community. At that point, you're just an anarchist. At that point, you're just a hooligan. And there is no justified cause behind that action. As just as there's no justified action behind looting. I don't really understand, like, even at your angriest moment, why you'd ever think it's a good idea to throw things at cops, you know, whether they're heavily armed or lightly armed. Nothing good comes from that. And here we are, we're like, you know, eight days into this, and we're left scratching our head what approach it's going to take. And one of the things that, you know, they said last night was they'd arrested people from very far away cities. So this is now, I don't know if this is necessarily connected to the Occupy movement, but it did kind of remind me of that, in which this is now just about everybody who's got an issue with authority going there and attempting to stir up trouble. And it's just not quite clear what approach it's going to take to get the situation calmed down. And it's come so far from the original incident of one shooting and questions about a local police department.
Speaking of the situation in Ferguson, let's go to the crazy martini. And the media coverage has been crazy on a number of fronts. I was watching some of the later coverage on Fox last night, and they had Mike Tobin out there saying, I think there's probably twice as many media at this point right now as there are demonstrators out here. And so the media are kind of taking over the situation. But another incident happened when Chris Hayes and Craig Melvin were live on MSNBC, and here's what happened there.
I want to just keep you in mind here. We've been out here since the live show at 7 p.m. Central. And whoa.
Hey. And watch out, Chris. You know what? They're throwing rocks at us now. It's you know what, we are telling the true story.
People are angry, man. They're really angry.
And so then they tried to carry on a conversation with people who weren't on mic. But, Jim, difficult situation there, clearly. And a little bit odd this morning that people are having so much fun at the idea of Chris Hayes getting pelted with rocks. I mean, he is kind of full of himself, but that could be a pretty dangerous situation.
For all of us on the right, everyone considers ourselves standing up for the best of America. Let's make sure that all the rocks we throw at Chris Hayes are metaphorical. There are a lot of things to gripe about with Chris Hayes. I don't think that means seeing him get, you know, something splattered across him or you know, serious injury to him is not necessarily the way we want to deal with these things. Now, if you find yourself struck by the irony, shall we say, as opposed to being struck by the rock, of a guy who's given a portrait of events largely sympathetic to the protesters and rather critical of the local police department, finding himself under attack by those own protesters, you know, that's worth noting and pointing out to Chris Hayes that maybe not everybody in that crowd is that noble-hearted civil rights activist that you seem to think that they are. Nobody deserves to have, you know, rocks thrown at them. Craig Melvin, another NBC correspondent, is right next to him, like, come on, nobody on the right should have a good epic gripe with Craig Melvin. The cameraman, like, not everybody affiliated with MSNBC is a bad person who needs to be, you know, pelted with something. That's just flat wrong. And so hopefully things calm down. It's one of those things where I don't understand how you can look at this situation and not be deeply troubled and suggest that, like, you know, besides the usual laments of this community of, you know, the police not treating them fairly, we end up with some sort of situation in which now it's just free-floating rage. Now it's just I'm angry at anybody and I'm going to go out and attack somebody or punish somebody, even Chris Hayes, who's been about as sympathetic to the protesters as you can imagine. So, yeah, it definitely feels like Ferguson is spiraling out of control. We can all take solace, Greg, in the fact that the situation is not so bad that the president couldn't go back to Martha's Vineyard today.
Eric Holder's going tomorrow, so I'm sure that'll solve
That'll calm it down. Yeah, there you go.
Jim, we'll hold it for there today. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.